Blog Talk Radio.
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm a guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm working for the state. I'm a highway patrol. Well, you know me when you see me, cause my door's painted white, with my siren screaming and my flashing red lights. I work all day and I work all night just to keep a law and order, trying to do what's right. If I write you out a ticket, then you better drive slow. I'm just doing my job on the highway patrol. I'm a highway patrol, a highway patrol. My hours are long and my pay is low, but I'll do my best to keep you driving slow. I'm just doing my job, I'm a highway patrol. I'm a highway patrol. I'm a highway patrol, a highway patrol. My hours are long and my pay is low, but I'll do my best to keep you driving slow. I'm just doing my job, I'm a highway patrol. I'm just doing my job, I'm a highway patrol.
Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, retired transport officer Dale Howard. I retired out of a 23-year law enforcement career. I became an owner-operator. I'm currently leased to a major carrier and fighting with some technical difficulties that I know Kevin and Lisa fight with on an ongoing basis doing the show from the road. I'm coming to you live from Fullerton, California. And as soon as my computer comes back to life, I will there we go. I've just had to change locations. And in a lot better spot. Tonight, I thought we would talk about winter. It's a kind of a terrible subject, but it is getting to be that time of year. And now is a good time to get prepared. Colorado has got the chain requirement up now. If you're on I-70 as of the 1st of September, you needed tire chains. For those who have never had the pleasure of tire chains, now is a real good time to get accustomed to chaining up. If you've never done it before, you probably want to get a hold of your safety department or maintenance department. And like I say, now is a good time to learn. When you're spun out halfway up a hill, it's a less than desirable time. We will hit our first caller tonight, and that would be 4844 Lisa's got the show off, so I'm screening and hosting. So 4844, you are live on the show.
Thanks, Dale. This is Hugh. How are you tonight?
Well, Hugh, I'm a lot better now that I've got an internet connection and things are running smooth.
Uh-oh. Now I'm having a problem.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I'm still on there. Okay. You were fading out on me there for a second. I assumed it was me. Okay. Go ahead.
Yep. No, I'm in Fullerton, California, a suburb of L.A., and I just don't have the greatest connection, and I don't understand why, but I think I've got it pulled together.
Well, it sounds good so far. Listen, I'm on daily inspections.
Yep.
There seems to be some disagreement, ambiguity, confusion about the daily inspection. Some very knowledgeable people tell me that you must do a pre-trip inspection every day, and then others tell me you must do a post-trip inspection every day, and still others say you must do a pre-trip inspection and at the end of your shift, an inspection report. Can you clarify all that?
Well, I can make it clear as mud. In Canada, you're required to do a pre-trip inspection, and in the U.S., you're required to do a post-trip inspection. What I do is I just do a pre-trip inspection because I'm interested first thing in the morning. Like when I we do a lot of drop and hooks, so I pick this trailer up on Monday.
Hey, Dale. Oh gosh, Dale, I hate to say this to you, but I'm coming into the California bug check station here at the state line, and this should not take more than a few seconds.
Oh, absolutely.
She'll probably wave me on since she's on the phone.
Boy, keeping California safe from the fruit
coolers. Okay, I'm done. She didn't want to end her phone call, so she just asked me what I had on. And I didn't want to end mine either. Okay, so
don't worry.
The U.S. law is, I'm sorry, what?
Is the U.S. you're required to do a post-trip inspection with the caveat that you are operating, you know, your vehicle is in safe, roadworthy mechanical order.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the road.
There's a way station immediately after the bug check station. I'm rolling across the scale now and listening to the speaker with my window down. And this guy appears to be on the phone as well.
Now, when you wave at him,
extremely light. Just be sure to use all five fingers. Yes, I know.
Yeah, make sure you wave with all five. So you're required to, you know, to make sure the vehicle is in safe operating, you know, condition at all times. And, you know,
right.
That's brakes, lights, tires, all the rest of that. So what I do is I pick this trailer up on Monday. So Monday, when I banged under it, I put my coveralls on, and I go under it. I go through it from one end to the other. And since it is brake check week, you know, I always measure push rod travel anyway, and I do a complete, basically level one inspection is my pre-trip inspection when I pick this trailer up. At the end of the day, you know, you just do a walk around and make sure nothing's fallen off and any of the obvious stuff. Now, the next morning, I don't put my coveralls on. I do a real thorough walk around, pull a spike down. I'm listening for air leaks and, But as long as I'm hooked to this trailer, I physically don't, you know, get under it. Now, tomorrow, I get rid of this trailer and I pick up another one to go home with. And, yeah, I'm going to put my coveralls on, give it a real thorough level one inspection. And then, you know, for the rest of the trip home, it's going to get, you know, a real good walk around.
Right.
Do you own your own trailer?
I do not. And
I might
have three or four trailers in 1 week, and other times I'll pull the same trailer for two or 3 weeks, just depending on how things go.
Yeah, you're in the same boat that I'm in then. So it's, you know, when I first hook onto that trailer, it gets the full meal deal. And then after that, you know what I've done to that trailer. And, you know, after that, it just gets a real good thorough walk around in the morning and at night.
I only run the U.S., so I should just make sure that I'm doing a post-trip, you know, at least, you know, logging and doing a post-trip inspection, and of course, just for good sense and safety, do a thorough walk around in the morning.
Absolutely, you know, and that's this goes back to the old Teamster days, you know, and good old line haul when we were regulated, and you know, the line haul guys back then never did a pre-trip inspection. They brought a set of trailers into the yard, unhooked, and the mechanic, you know, went over all that stuff at the end of the day.
Right.
That's where this all came from. And nothing's been updated. You know, at the end of the day, it's nice to know what's wrong with stuff, but, you know, at the beginning of the day is when I'm the most interested in the condition of my equipment, because the last thing I want to do is, you know, have an airline that's, you know, kind of rubbed through all day, and then that night with the wind and, you know, jostling the trailer around, it's finally rubbed itself through, and first thing in the morning, you know, that's when I want to catch that. You know, I don't want to wait until I've drug it another 600 miles down the road and some clown at a way station, like I was in my former life, jumps out in front of me in a pair of orange coveralls and starts writing tickets.
Hey, let me show you what you missed in your pre-trip this morning.
Oh, that, you know what? That was, when I was doing inspections, that was my first question. What did you find on your pre-trip inspection? And other than the deer in the headlight look, not very much. And then, well, obviously I've got to put my coveralls on and get under it, and I'll show you what you should have found. So, yeah. You can't go wrong with a good, thorough pre-trip.
Do you have time to move on to another topic?
Sure, you betcha.
The one that you brought up in your opening about chains. I've been out here 26 years altogether, all the trucking I've done, you know, local P&D, over the road, everything, about 26 years. In that time, I've chained up exactly once. And that was because we were given the all clear, took off, got to the top of the mountain. They shut us down and said, chain up. That's the only time I ever chained up. I have kind of a policy that if it's bad enough for chains, it's too bad to be running. And I don't even carry chains anymore. And in the wintertime, those places that have a chain laws that require you to carry chains at certain times of the year, I just don't go there. And my question for you is am I still at risk at finding myself in a situation where I have to chain up and just don't have the chains? Is that a risk that I'm taking by not carrying chains at all and just trying to avoid those chain up situations?
Yeah, it is. And you know what, Hugh, I am with you. I've had my CDL for 34 years, and I've driven through that 34 years off and on, full-time, part-time, and I've chained up, you know, I can probably count on one hand the amount of times I've chained up. I avoid it like the plague. And I use tire chains, you know, if they're going to make me chain up to get over one hill and I can keep going the rest of the day, you know what, I'm going to chain up. But if I'm going to have to chain and unchain and chain all day, then yeah, I'm paying the deductible and it's just not worth it. My carrier that I'm leased to has a policy. They don't want us chaining up. Chains are to get you to a safe location to park. And since I'm paying the deductible, I got to agree with that. In the fall, my chains are all still in the same bags they were when I bought them. They go into a toolbox, and in the spring, I take them out and throw them in my garage. You know, if I were you, I'd have a set of singles, if nothing else. Just grab yourself a lightweight set of singles, and that's going to get you out of, I mean, tire chains are to get you out of trouble you should have been smart enough not to get into in the first place.
Start with, yeah. But like I say, so, he only had to do it one time. Yeah, but, you know, not only are you paying the deductible, but you also have your wife and children's husband and father in there with you.
Oh, and the downtime and everything else that goes along with it. I mean, you don't have, you know, in the wintertime, you don't have a small wreck. And it's, you know, I would just, you know, if I were you, I'd just grab a set of lightweight singles and, you know, leave them in the bag, throw them in the boot box, and in the spring take them out. And, you know, if you need them, they're there. And if you don't, you just, you know, you got a paperweight for the summer.
There you go. Thanks a lot for your time, Dale. I always enjoy when you're on.
Hey, thanks for the call, and we're going to move on. Another thing, now that I'm settled down and have a connection, for those of you listening online, why don't you jump on? We got a few phone lines left. Number to call in is 347-884-8327. And on the wintertime topic, another thing I do is I've got a winter survival bag. When I was on the job, I had a hockey bag that I had my snow boots in, a pair of insulated coveralls, balaclava, mitts, toques, scarves, vest. That all fits nicely in a hockey bag. And again, in the fall, when I throw my tire chains in, that bag goes under the bed, and if you're caught and stuck, I'm not going to freeze to death. You would not believe the amount of times I have rescued people that are just not prepared for the conditions they're driving into. I remember back in the 80s, for those dinosaurs out there like me, y'all remember Hill and Hill. They were out of Texas, flat deck outfit. And I remember one poor kid showed up in Calgary, and it's 48 below. And he's got a jean jacket, T-shirt, blue jeans, and a pair of sneakers. And, I mean, this kid is just freezing to death. And if anything happened to him, he would have froze to death. You know, the weather is so unpredictable. I got called out one night. A farmer in the middle of a blizzard noticed a guy walking in his field, and the guy disappeared in the snow. And we got the call at 4 in the morning. Well, you know, it's a raging blizzard. We're not going out. It was about 8:30 before the storm broke enough that we could actually, you know, go out and start looking for this clown. And at that point, you know, it's 35, 38 below in a wind chill. You know, we're on a recovery mission. This is not a search and rescue. This is, we're out there to recover a body. Long story short, we locate a car in a clearing, and I get all my winter gear on and walk down there, and geez, this thing's running. So I yard the door open, and the night before, this young couple had gone out for a little romantic interlude out in the country, got lost, this storm blew in, and the temperature dropped 60 degrees. And, you know, they've got an eighth of a tank of gas left in the car. Fortunately, he had enough sense to come back to the car. You know, she's in a nice frilly little blouse and a skirt. He's in jeans and a T-shirt. I carried her back out to the police car on my back and broke a trail for him. And, you know, she was thankful we showed up because, you know, she wasn't sure she could spend another night in the car. Well, I had to break the news to her that, you know, about another hour after that car ran out of fuel, you were going for the big sleep, sweetie, and you weren't waking back up. So you have no idea what's, you know, what winter is going to deal out to you. And, yeah, you got to be prepared. Let's go to 362.
I got like 19 pieces of clothes.
And you're live and on the show. 3620, it's your dime. You're on.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yeah.
How are you going to be doing?
Well, not bad. How are you?
No, I am not doing too good. I am to be listening to what you are saying, and then I do not want to be cold.
Well, I'm with you, because I don't want to be cold either. That's why I'm in California right now and not in a big hurry to go home, because they're talking about snow on Friday.
That's very, very bad, yes. I am to be not, you're saying that I to be getting lots of clothes.
You've got
to
be
very, very warm.
Your phone's breaking up there. So let's go to 6202. 6202, you're live on the show.
I guess that would be me, Carl.
That would be you, Carl.
Okay, good deal, Carl. I'm out of Colorado.
Well,
I've got an answer for a lot of these gentlemen out here that especially run Colorado and even maybe you for Canada, but I don't know how we're going to get them approved up there yet. But we have a product that I sell called traction sanders. You ever heard of them?
Oh. Yes. In fact, back my second job out of high school, I worked for Loomis Armored Car Service, and we had those in our highway trucks.
Yep, they use them a lot. School buses out in Washington. We just got them approved here in Colorado a couple years ago to have them on our big trucks, and I own a small trucking company, just the one truck, me and my truck, but I stumbled across these things and started, now I'm a dealer of them, and it's the best thing in the world because, you know, Colorado, that gentleman was talking about states that have chain law from September 1st till May 31st like we do. Well, when you go up I-70, a lot of times, their rule is 100 feet of snow or ice on Vail Pass or Eisenhower. They throw chain law, and the rest of the road might be dry. So now you're running chains, tearing up your chains, your tires, and the road for no reason.
You know, and that's you hit the nail on the head, guys. I've come across out of Oregon into California. They've had the chain law up, and you're running in slush.
Right, exactly, and you don't really need them, but, you know, we started running these sanders, you know, a couple of years ago, and I've got all my friends that own their own trucks. I got every one of them running them now, and last year I chained up twice, more because they call me chicken, but I like to be safe, too.
There's something to be said for a little healthy fear.
Exactly. So, you know, I chained up twice the whole season. That's not bad. One guy, I mean, he said he didn't chain up at all. And I said, well, you're a little crazier than I am.
Well, I'm a little lazier. I didn't chain up, so I just went to bed. Because honestly, most of the trouble you get into is at night. I've yet to chain up or been run into some real crappy roads during the day.
Yeah, we and that's all we do. We haul groceries, so all we do is run night. And I had a friend of mine last year before as soon as he got hit by a vehicle, he didn't get hurt, thank God, but the moment he got hit while he was out chaining up on Bell Pass, he come to me and says, I need a pair of sanders. And, you know, they've got auto chains.
I've looked at those, and those kind of a tree meat. Are the sanders legal in Colorado?
Yes, they are. They are approved in Colorado. We got them approved a couple of years ago. And they're, you know, the auto chains, I had them on my first truck. I liked them. I liked the premise of them. But it seemed like through one season, I spent $1,000 fixing parts. With these, I've had these on my truck now for 2 years, and all I do is add a little bit of kitty litter to it.
Are you using kitty litter or sandblasting sand?
I'm using kitty litter. We've got guys that are using the coal slag. We've got guys using play sand, you know, that box play sand stuff. I find that's not coarse enough for me, or too coarse, or whatever you want to call it. It's not big enough. So,
well, that's interesting, though, sanders, because back, you know, gosh, the 60s and 70s, they were very popular, and then they kind of faded out, and now the trouble we had at Loomis Armored Car with them was, you know, they'd get a little moisture in them, and I think that was more of a maintenance issue.
Yep, that will happen now, mostly in the summertime, and what I tell people, if they're going to leave them on their trucks in the summertime, I take mine off, but if you're going to leave them on your truck in the summertime, you need to, every once in a while, just push the button and activate them and let some of the stuff fall out. And, some people put the wrong type of sand in. That gets moist, and then you got problems.
Okay. How do you find for weight?
They are, with a load on your truck for the 6-inch side, you're looking at about 120 pounds added to your truck.
Boy, that's nothing, because I've got, you know, I've got at least 300 pounds probably in tire chains.
I still carry the chains, but
yeah,
I don't carry as many.
My problem, I just don't have the wheelbase.
Right.
You know, because I've got an APU, and it's fuel tank APU drives.
Well, now, there might be a solution for that, too, because we have what they call quarter fenders. So they take the place of the actual quarter fender. Do you still have your quarter fender on there?
Yeah.
In front of your APU? Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
So, you might be able to just slide your APU. Some of them, you can slide them a couple inches, and then you can put on these quarter fenders. And that you take off your quarter fender, and then it takes the place of your quarter fender. Its shape looks, you know, I mean, it's shaped the contour with the tire, has a mud flap. It looks just like a quarter fender. Now those are a little bit heavier. They can hold up to, almost 240 pounds worth of material. So, those can be a little heavier if you're worried about weight. But you don't have to fill them up as much if you're worried about the weight either.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Is there a website?
Yep, you can just Google, traction sanders.
Oh, okay.
It's actually Elston Manufacturer, is who builds them. And I'm a dealer for them here in Colorado. I ship anywhere in the United States. I'm in the process of building my website now. But it's a great product. I love them to death, and everybody that I've ever sold them to loves them. So it's a wonderful thing to have on your truck.
Well, I'm going to, thanks for jumping in tonight, and I'm going to move on, but I am going to Google that and have a look at it, because, yeah, that brings up an excellent point. When, you know, when you're out on the side of the highway chaining up, you know, that is the most dangerous place you can be. And again, that's why I say you really want to, if you've never chained a vehicle up, you know, now that the weather is starting to turn, it's a good time to get with your safety and maintenance people and master this skill when you're not, when you don't have a gun to your head. Because that's all of my near-death experiences on the job, 23 years of law enforcement. You know, I've been shot at. That is not as scary as standing on the side of a freeway while people are zinging by you. So, yeah, excellent point. 4536, you are live on the show.
Hello.
Hello there.
I've got a question about shock absorbers in CSA 2010 and the relevance of working shock absorbers to a passing inspection.
Okay.
Is it necessary to have working shock absorbers?
Great question.
I mean functional shock absorbers that have hydraulic fluid and they actually work to keep the tires in contact with the ground.
Great, great question. And I'm just digging out my out-of-service criteria as we speak, and I will look that up.
I've probably had three inspections in the last 10 years. I've never seen anybody touch them, put their hands on the shock absorbers. I'm sure they probably did, but I'm driving a truck now 500,000 miles on it, just shy of 500,000 miles. These shocks have no hydraulic fluid in them. I can run my steers out of round in about 60,000, 70,000 miles, and the company just replaces the front tires when the bounce gets to be so high.
Yeah.
I know that ultimately, you know, not having good shock absorbers can affect virtually everything else in the engine compartment, all of your mounts for your pumps and alternators, and my air conditioning system went out because the vibration essentially just, you know, put too much strain on the tubing, and they ended up having to change a high pressure hose because of it.
Yep. You know, working shock absorber is not listed in the North American CBSA out-of-service criteria.
Yeah, because I've been writing it up for half the time I've had the truck, almost a 250,000 miles, and they will not change them out. And
yep.
I just need somebody to ride in this truck to see what it's like when I hit a good-sized bump.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of a false saving, but... Yeah, there's nothing in the out-of-service criteria that, you know, if a shock was the only thing that would come into play is if the shock was broken and...
Because
it can
have an impact on your kingpins and all, can it?
Oh, shocks...
Everything.
Yeah, there's a reason they're there, and, you know, it's a false saving that some of these fleets and owner-operators alike get into that, you know, refuse to change them.
I just went through a set of front steers in 70,000 miles, and they could have replaced, for the cost of one tire, they could have replaced all of the shock absorbers.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's such an easy fix. What's a shock worth? 36, 40 bucks, and half an hour late, put it on.
It takes no time at all.
To me, it's kind of a no-brainer, but somebody way smarter than me makes these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But, to answer your question, there's nothing in the out-of-service criteria that requires a working shock absorber.
Okay. The other question I had was, everybody has this dislike of super singles. They say, you know, you can blow a tire when you're running duals and, you know, keep rolling down the road, but... As far as CSA 2010, if you were driving down the road and you had a tire flattened and was starting to shred off and a patrolman came up, what kind of a point total would that cause you if you got caught running with the tire trying to make it to the next exit and they saw you flapping rubber on the side of a wheel?
It's an immediate out of service.
Yeah.
A flat a flat tire is not a service violation.
But how many points would that be?
Let me grab
that's
my...
That's got to be a fairly big one. That's got to be a high safety value.
It's... let me just find it here in my guide. But it's, you know, not only that, it's... we had a fatality accident just before I got transferred into the area that I retired out of, and it was a piece of rubber that came off a tire and went through the windshield and killed a woman. And
I've had a close call driving a POV down the highway down in Florida, and I know not to ride directly behind the tractor trailer. And no sooner had I changed lanes when he kicked off a tread that went straight through the car behind me that had decided to stay in the lane behind the tractor trailer and sort of draft off of him.
Yep.
Seen it happen.
Oh, it's, you know what, and it's, you know, that's somebody's wife, husband, brother,
yeah,
sister, and it's very selfish to... you know, to try and limp down to the next truck stop. And, I mean, look at the amount of rubber that's out on the road. Like, good
yeah,
Lord.
It's not as bad as it used to be. I think the technology for retreading tires has gotten a lot better than it was 20, 30 years ago. But you still see them out on the road. But I think that's more a function of the drivers not inspecting and, you know, putting themselves out of service until they can get it repaired.
Oh, sure. Well, and here it is, 393.75, parenthesis A, is a flat tire or fabric exposed. It's 8 points, and the driver is responsible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's for the price of a call-out. And you know what? I check my tire pressure every morning, and I can tell you, any truck stop I've gone to bed in, I get up in the morning. I am the only guy in that parking lot doing that. I would like to hope that there's more people out there doing that. But
yeah,
if you stay on top of it, you don't have the tire issues.
Yeah, and this is the time of the year as the temperatures start to drop, your tire pressure starts to drop correspondingly because of the colder temperatures. So you've got to almost be in a mode where you're constantly putting air in the tires to keep them up because there's nothing worse than a tire that's lower inflated.
Well, sure, I just topped mine up this morning when I got out of bed while I was fueling up. I had to put about 5 pounds in my steers.
Yeah, makes a difference, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for jumping in. We're going to take some more calls. Those of you online, 347-884-8327. Dial us up, push 1, and I'll be screening your calls. And we are going to 7943. You are live on the show.
Hey, how's it going, Dale?
Hey, not bad.
Good. My name's Ron. I was going to weigh in a little bit. I've talked to you before, but I'm kind of the same mindset of you and my friend Hugh there, that... If it's bad enough to put on chains, then it's time for me to pull over. Now that being said, I've had to chain up 3 times in the last 3 years, and every one of those times is 2 times last winter and then once 2 years ago going over Donner Pass. And each time I was going to Sacramento or to Stockton, California, and all I had to do was get over the hill. So I said, I'm not waiting until tomorrow. I'll go ahead and chain up, and I did. So,
and you know,
but
go ahead. I got no problem. I got no problem, you know, chaining up to get over a hill, you know, and carry on. Where I just don't see any point in it is, you know, you're going to chain up to get over this hill, then take them off and run 20 miles, and then chain up to get over the next hill and crawl, claw your way over that hill, you know, stop, take them off, drive another 30 miles, chain up again. You know, there's just no point in that.
Yeah, no, you're not getting anywhere fast, and, you know, you're just open up your 14-hour clock, basically.
Well, and it's absolutely you're wasting hours, and you're exposing yourself hugely every time you are out messing with that truck on the side of the highway. You may as well just put a bullseye on the back of your head. The motoring public has no concept, and some of us professional drivers, and I'm making the air parentheses, and I hope everybody gets the sarcasm, are not much better when they're out there careening down the road, because it's, that's the most dangerous place you can be.
Yeah, it is. I've got, I wanted to say something, too, about the tire socks. I just wanted to throw that out there because that was something that Hugh might be able to use to carry, lightweight, just to get you out of a jam if you needed. My true question tonight is though generators on the trucks. And I noticed that, and I've got a generator I'm getting ready to mount on my truck. And I wanted to know, I've heard about that you couldn't have gravity-fed fuel tanks, that you had to have a separate tank with a fuel pump going to the generators to make them legal. But I see everybody's just got them, just regular generators on there, and nobody seems to be calling them on it, or maybe that's not the case. I'm not sure what the actual rule is.
You know, that's a darn good question, and that's something I have not researched. To be honest, I don't know what the rule is on gasoline, whether or not you can just have a gravity tank or a boat tank.
Right. Well, I've got a diesel generator, so I'm going. And the reason why I went with that was just to be able to basically hit the reefer fuel button and to not have to pay the fuel taxes on it, since it's not propelling the vehicle down the road. And
yep.
I don't have to carry a spare gas can and walk over to the other side of the truck stop.
No, and that's an excellent point. I designed the emergency response vehicles for our department, and I had the department all talked into diesel generators. And my sergeant shot his mouth off and was talking when he should have been listening and spouting off on stuff he didn't know anything about. And we wound up with gas generators, and what a pain in the butt. You know, we had a separate fuel tank, and it was a 60-gallon tank, so you couldn't sit out at an incident for a couple of days. But, you know, you're still screwing around with two different fuel sources, and it's just a lot easier when you got a single fuel source. And yeah, because if you're unlucky enough to sit at the top of Donner's or sit on the Grapevine for 2 and 3 days, and that's not out of the question, yeah, there's not a lot of gas at your disposal, whereas diesel fuel you've got lots of.
Right. Yep, definitely. Well, I appreciate your time, and hopefully I can find that answer from someone. I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm going to be completely legal, because even if nobody's really checking or slapping anybody's hand, if that is the case, you know, I just want to make sure that, you know, you get to California or something, and they'll be the ones that are checking.
Oh, absolutely, and thank you very much for the call. And yeah, you know what, I got to apologize, because I've never looked into that. And, you know, on the enforcement scale, if I was still on the job, I'd have bigger fish to fry than go after that, but hey, you never know. Some people are go after the darndest things, and yeah, California ranks right up there. Again, if you want to jump into the show, push 1, and we'll do our best to get to you. Right now, we are going to 1169. Good evening, and you are live on the air.
Good evening, Dale. When I had a diesel generator on my truck, that was one of the things I had. It came with a gravity tank, but I had used a small 12-volt fuel pump and went right to my truck's fuel tank. But I did that more out of convenience than anything, than having to, and I was never checked by anybody. You know.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I, it, I mean, shame on anybody that does put that high on the radar, because I think there's bigger fish out there to fry than that one. But, hey, you never ever know. I had to... Officers
well,
I worked
I had another
with
question.
Going after goofy things. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I had two other things. One on the shocks. If the shock's leaking, wouldn't that be a different deal for an out-of-service thing, or no? If it was visually leaking?
It would be a required attention item to be repaired at trip's end, you know, because it is a suspension component. But it's
right.
As far as an out-of-service, it's not listed, in the out-of-service criteria. And that's...
Right, but it's a fix-it then, right?
Sorry?
It's like a fix-it ticket then, right?
Yeah, it's you repair it at trip's end. And I really, really need to stress and encourage everybody to go on the CVSA website, the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, and you can purchase an out-of-service criteria. And that is just a tremendous resource to have with you.
Right.
When you find something that you're not real sure of, you can whip out your out-of-service criteria, and that gives you the, you know, that is the Bible. And, go ahead.
You also had the other area, too, on the snow chains. And I guess I'm on the opposite side on that belief. I mean, never would I ask, tell anyone to chain up if they don't feel safe. But at the same time, all the years I've ran the Northwest expedited freight, it's normally the trucks in the ditch that don't have chains on, not the ones that do have chains on. I can't tell you how many times I've been going across Wyoming. Chain law was not in effect, but trucks were wrecking that didn't have chains. You could still have them on. You didn't have to. You know, like if it's snowpack, 2-3 inches of snowpack. And
yep.
some of those guys' belief is that, I'm heavy enough and it's gray. My tires are gray. I'm fine. You know?
You have hit the nail on the head, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's I am very fortunate. The carrier I'm leased to has a right to decide policy, and they are anal about that. And if you do not feel comfortable out on the road, then you have no business being on that road. And it just annoys me to no end to hear these guys, well, you got to go. You don't have to go. This is your life and somebody else's life. And as an owner-operator, it's your deductible and your downtime. And you get a good enough wreck in a gray area, and you could go broke waiting to settle a claim. It's just not worth it. My very first job back in 1980 as an owner-operator, the John Rutek Transmutual Truck Lines took me aside and said, listen, it's a lot easier to phone a customer and tell them their load's going to be late than it is to phone a customer and tell them their load's upside down and we have no idea how much of it we're going to salvage.
Right. I run up there a lot, the wife and I do, and it's our carrier's got an oddball policy. If it's safe, you're on the road. If the roads ain't closed, you're on the road. If the roads are closed, you're off the road. And we do chain up a lot. It doesn't bother me. You know, it really doesn't. But we're not going to sacrifice ourselves. And what really bothers me is when I'll sit out there and we're trying to do the best we can to be safe running on some roads that might be questionable. If I didn't feel safe, I wouldn't be on them. And there's someone out there risking the lives of others that doesn't want to chain up. You know what I mean? That upsets me.
Sure.
I seen it happen last year. I seen a husband-wife team take out two other trucks. They all died because they didn't want to chain. And if they didn't want to chain, they shouldn't have been on the road is all I'm saying. That's my opinion.
Yep.
We had just sat with this team in a truck stop for a day and a half. Well, basically a day and a half because the interstate was shut down. They opened the interstate for emergency travel only. Well, that didn't matter. Once they opened the interstate, everybody in the truck stop headed out. Everybody. You know, that's all go. And it's always in my belief, I'll wait an extra 6-7 hours. I've seen it too many times. They're going to be wrecking out there left and right when they open the roads.
Oh, sure. And that's,
you know?
and And exactly, what have you accomplished, you know, stuck behind somebody that's sideways and got the road plugged? You know, you may as well be sitting back at the Petro drinking coffee. Appreciate you jumping in there, and I'm sorry I got to cut you short so we can squeeze in as many guys as I can. Let's go to 1595. You are live and on the show.
Hey, evening, Dale. How you doing?
Good, thanks. Yourself?
Good, good. Yeah, I was the one caller, Hedy. I was going to talk about that tire sock. He mentioned it very quickly there. But for, you know, the guys that don't want to chain up and don't want to carry chains, that tire sock is so lightweight and tiny. You can stick it anywhere. I mean, if you're not going to use the chains, why carry them? You know,
well,
take the way the tire sock in, and you've got it in case you need an emergency, but other than that, you're going to pull over anyways.
Well, exactly. Have you, that's that auto sock, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Have you used those?
I haven't used them, but Kevin's talked about them quite a bit, and he's had a lot of callers come on that have used them, and they don't last overly long. Like, you'll probably go through a set in a season if you're using them a lot, but if you're not using them at all, you know, what's the point of carrying around 300 pounds in chains?
Well, you know what, and you're absolutely right, because it's, you know, I am more prone to chain up in a parking lot to get a trailer out than I am to chain on the highway. And I think that auto sock could just be the cat's meow from everything I've seen of it, you know, because you can put it on before you back down into the dock. And, yeah, that sounds a lot better than, you know, just throwing a set of singles on.
But, you know, you started out the show there talking about the winter driving. I think it'll, you know, good thing for a lot of the new drivers is start, you know, listening to the old drivers out there, what they look for when they're going down the road in the blizzards and that, when you can't see, you know, how to judge where you are in the road. Like, look for plow lines on the side of the road. You know, when you're driving down the road in a good day, look and see how far those plow lines are away, because when you hit the blizzard up the road, you can't see anything but that plow line. At least you're going to know where you are.
Well, and you are exactly right. And yes, to any of the junior drivers that are listening, yeah, you really have to be prepared and do not overdrive your abilities, because that's when you get into trouble. And you know what? When your crossway's upside down in the ditch, you're not a hero anymore. You know, nobody's going to thank you for trying to make it when you're upside down.
You know, I'm like Lance. My company's the same way as his. You know, you're going. If the roads are open, you're going. If the authorities close the highways, well, then you go. But you just go, you know, don't overdrive your ability, but, you know, just you're still going. But I think a lot of the problem that happens out here is the guys that don't have the ability, they don't drive in the snow that much or haven't, and they're out here doing half the speed of all the other vehicles on the highway. They're actually creating a hazard. And, you know, these guys should realize that and say, you know, and get off the highway until it clears that they can drive to the ability of everybody else.
Yeah, it's, you really have to know your limits. And again, thanks for jumping in there. And I'm sorry, I'm going to try and squeeze in as many guys as I can. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, if you're that scared, you know, and there is no shame in some good, healthy fear. And if you don't feel comfortable and you're scared to be out here, you should not be out here for your safety and everybody else's. We had a wreck about driving into snow clouds. A fully loaded Super B hit a snow plow, and he hit him so hard, he flipped him upside down into the opposing ditch. You know, there's this cloud of snow going down the road, and, you know, limited experience, so he just put his foot in it and wanted to get through that cloud of snow. Well, that cloud of snow was a snow plow. Let's move on to 6187. You are live and on the show. Good evening.
Hello, Dale. How are you doing this evening?
Good, thanks. Yourself?
Hey, like our company, they got a policy. You're the captain of the ship. They can't see out my windshield. I can. So I make all the...
That's the best way to be, because if your ship is going down, you're going down with it.
Yep. And a little side question here. I've been hearing a lot of controversy about this new program for on the smartphones for your log booking, like you drove it and there's a few others out there, about the legality of them.
It meets the American requirement. It does not meet the Canadian requirement. So if you cross the border and run into Canada, you will have to run a paper log if you're using a log application off your smartphone.
All right.
And if you are going to use a log off a smartphone or one of those applications, you have to ensure that it meets that requirement under the regulation.
Right, because everybody says, well, I never seen a smartphone that can print. Because it says right in the FMCSA that you must be able to print that log sheet at the end of the day. Well, I'm with a company where we got electronic logs using Qualcomm. That Qualcomm can't print. All that we do is if we get pulled in for an inspection, we just ask for a fax number, punch that into the Qualcomm, and they get the printed copy of the last 8 days.
Well, and I think what the guys are doing with the applications off the phones is how they're meeting that particular requirement is they're emailing that log sheet to themselves and then printing it off if they've got
right.
a printer in or somebody
so,
has
so,
access.
So I figured if the Qualcomm can do it via fax machine, then my phone has the capability of sending it to a fax machine. So what would be the difference?
Yeah, no, that's as long as you can produce a
hard copy
in a timely manner.
Yep.
Then you're going to be safe. Sorry, don't mean to cut you short, but I'm going to try and squeeze in one more caller. 9357, you are live and on the show.
How are we doing tonight?
Hey, not bad.
I've had a couple of buddies that got inspected, and neither one of them got tickets, but the officer told both of them that their logbook was supposed to be called up until the last 3 hours, and both of them had been driving over 3 hours, so obviously it was called up to the last duty status, which, you know, was driving.
Yeah, and
over 3 hours, but the officer said that they were supposed to have it called up to the last 3 hours. Do you know anything about that?
It's got to be current to the last change of duty status. And, you know, that's why they didn't get a ticket, and that's why they didn't get any documentation. And sorry, I'm going to have to finish this one off the air because we're just about out of time. But, you've got to be current to your last change of duty status, and there's no real time limit, you know, set on there. If you've been driving 4 hours, then you have to be, you have to be legal to that. You know what? You probably should be stopping every 3 hours and kicking your tires and having a walk around and flag it. But they're the only requirement there is to be caught up to your last change of duty status. The hour has flown right by here. I would like to thank everybody for jumping on and joining me tonight. Apologize for the slow start at the beginning of the show, but once I repositioned and got internet service, things went a lot smoother. Kevin and Lisa are going to be live on 171 and 147 here in half an hour, so please be sure and join the live show. And again, thank you very much for tuning in. Stay safe. As much as I hate to say it, we all got to get ready for winter because it is getting to be that time. Stay profitable, stay compliant, And just like you, when you pass that weigh scale, make sure you wave with all your...
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm a guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm working for the state on the highway patrol. Well, you know me when you see me, cause my door's painted white, with my siren screaming and my flashing red light. I work all day and I work all night, just to keep a law and order, trying to do what's right. If I write you out a ticket, then you better drive slow. I'm just doing my job on the highway patrol. I'm a highway patrol, a highway patrol. My hours are long and my pay is low, but I'll do my best to keep you driving slow. I'm just a